this Sunday, and in fact, every Sunday since that first Easter Sunday 2,000 years ago, Christians claim to forever live in the wake of resurrection. In fact, Sunday worship serves as a weekly reminder of God's promise of new life out of dead places. And that it didn't just happen long ago, but it is the ongoing reality in which we claim to live, which is why it is so sad that all too frequently in our lives, in my life, in your life, in the lives of those that we know, in our deep and hidden places, even the hearts of people of faith, this promise of new life out of death so often is unfulfilled. It's as though resurrection didn't ever happen, and it certainly is not going to happen for me or for you or for that thing and that place. That tomb remains sealed tightly by hard emotional and spiritual things that come into our lives, come into every life, seemingly immovable stones that keep us sealed in the tomb of Good Friday, the stone unmoved, unable to even dream that there could be something like a resurrection. That's why these weeks after Easter, we're taking some time to look directly at some of those very hard, stone-like issues, those things that become barriers to blocking our stepping out of the tomb into the new life of resurrection, those places in our lives, in our hearts, that I encourage us, are we bold enough to pray to God, bold enough to even say to ourselves, roll the stone away? Our lives will be visited inevitably by some, if not all, of the difficult issues that we confront. The first Sunday, it was a look at loss and grief. The second, Reverend Darren McDonald turned our attention to the hard issue of anger. Then a look at issues that can be so intractable for many of us, guilt and shame. And last week, Reverend Diane opened up one of the most difficult issues and one of the most transformative opportunities for our growth, forgiveness. It was, in fact, a conversation with Reverend Diane a number of months ago about the issue of forgiveness that prompted this whole series. In that conversation, I came to the saddening realization that I actually could not ever recall preaching directly about the issue of forgiveness. That should sadden a pastor, and it saddened me. Something that is so core to our religious tradition and our spiritual well-being. So that conversation about forgiveness actually prompted this whole series. And forgiveness being such a profound issue in the course of this resurrection series, which, by the way, will conclude next Sunday. We're nearing the end, but not quite there yet. It's such an important issue, forgiveness, that we're actually going to devote two sermons to it in the six-week series. Diane, part one, and today, part two. My thoughts and reflections on forgiveness. And let me also remind you, as Diane announced last week, we will be starting a forgiveness group in June, beginning June 7th, meeting the first and third Sundays, and it will be following the wonderful book by Desmond and Fotutu, The Book of Forgiving. So I'll leave that there as a visual aid to which I will point numerous times. You can sign up for the group in the fireside room, and all the information on the book and group are in the bulletin as well. So to begin today, it is good to point out a few key points that Diane mentioned last Sunday that bear repeating and highlighting, particularly if you were unable to be with us last Sunday. And actually, they are, in many ways, our common misunderstandings about what it means or does not mean to forgive. Misunderstandings that actually prevent us from even daring to come close to that huge stone that keeps so many of us in the tomb. So some of those key points for remembering are these. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is not forgetting. It doesn't erase the reality of what happened, the pain or the harm that was caused. Forgiveness is not to forget. Forgiving is not to condone or absolve or minimize what happened either. It doesn't ever say that what happened was okay or wasn't as bad as it was. And forgiveness does not subvert or avoid justice. It just means that whatever justice is enacted does not include the motivation of revenge. It does not avert justice. It simply means justice is not motivated by revenge. And most importantly, forgiving is not weakness. Quite the opposite. It requires fearless remembrance, courage, strength, and time, sometimes a lifetime. What then is forgiving and forgiveness? There are lots of ways to describe it, particularly poetic ways to describe it, but the most helpful descriptions I have found are these. To forgive is to release yourself from the power of a trauma or a hardship of the past to define your story forever. To release yourself from the power of a trauma or a hurt in the past to define your story forever. It's to reclaim your life as your own, to become free to write a new and a different story that is no longer defined by that pain of the past. To forgive is to be defined by the healing, not the wound. To forgive is to be defined by the healing and not the wound. So as I prepared for this sermon, I began reflecting upon what work of forgiveness is needed in my own life. And it took me a while. So I first had to pause and notice and be very grateful for the fact that in many ways my life has been fortunate to be relatively free from traumatic wounds and devastating life-altering losses. I recognize, particularly the older I get and the more people's stories I hear and come to know, I am more and more grateful. However, it was not too long before I began to recall incidents and patterns of my childhood that it seems I'm still working on, that may need some forgiveness. Now, as I have mentioned, and you may recall, I was born and raised in rural Western Pennsylvania, north of Pittsburgh. Particularly in the 60s and 70s, it was still a very rural area. And Western Pennsylvania is quite different than Eastern. It's sort of the upper end of Appalachia, coal mining, steel mills, etc. So as I was growing up, the culture in which I was raised, football was ubiquitous, as was hunting animals for sport, and chewing tobacco, called snuff, where I grew up. All three things of which I loathed. Now, as you can well imagine, growing up there, as a fat, unathletic, effeminate boy, it went, no, it's okay. Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. It's worth a chuckle. Yeah, it was difficult. It actually meant years of childhood bullying. The most painful places were the school playground, the school bus, and gym class. And actually, as I recall it, the bullying first began to ramp up in the second grade. I was 6 or 7 at the time. And by the third grade, I was already carrying Maalox to school because my stomach was always on the edge of upset from the stress and anxiety. And by junior high, I remember that I had developed a curiosity about suicide. Now, it is nothing that I attempted, thankfully, but it became an intellectual fascination about which I actually did a book report and a speech in class. As I think about this, you know, more than 30 years later, I wonder if a teacher ever noticed. The bullying in school remained pretty much unrelenting for about 8 years, as I recall it. And I was already naturally an introverted and bookish child, and I became even more withdrawn, and I simply reached the decision that I did not like people because they did not like me. And my only acceptable, and trust me, they were marginally acceptable, accomplishments were in academics and in classical music. They were actually the places I learned were safe retreats from the painful social battlefields of childhood. If my home and my family of origin and my childhood church, if they had not been safe places, or if I were growing up now during our generation of social media bullying, I wonder how my story might end. Friday night, here at MCC Portland, we hosted Portland's GSA Chorus, Gay Straight Alliance Chorus, one of the few in the nation for youth aged 13 to 22. There were a few of us from MCC Portland, but the congregation was filled, these seats were filled to overflowing with supporters of that GSA chorus. I wonder how different my life, or maybe your life, could have been had there been a GSA group at your junior high or high school. Whose life is that chorus saving right now? So that bullying I experienced was 40 years ago, and I've become a pretty confident, self-possessed, out gay man, which is nothing short of the amazing grace of God. But there will always be moments, it seems, of awkward public embarrassment that feels like humiliation, or when there's some random homophobic slur that is hurled by a stranger. And those are moments where my heart and my stomach still clutch when that bullied 10-year-old reminds me he is still alive inside of me. So I still have some forgiveness work to do. Now, as I was doing this inventory and reflected on that childhood experience, I began to remember something I had long forgot, and that was another younger boy that was on the same bus route as I was. Actually, he lived only a few miles from me. He was a couple of years younger. He was smaller, even more withdrawn, and was also a target of being bullied, particularly on the school bus. And as I began to remember that other young boy, I realized that often when others were picking on him, I would find myself piling on. All the while knowing it was hurtful, because I knew what it felt like. Perhaps it was just a moment of feeling the relief of, oh, somebody else is the target for once. But to know that I was bullied myself may be an explanation, but is no excuse. And to know the truth of how I probably hurt that other young boy fills me today with remorse. Because not only do I need to forgive, I stand in the need of forgiveness from others. Forgiveness for inflicting pain and harm, some of which I knew, and a lot of which I probably don't know. You know, it's interesting this week. Some of you may have seen circulated on Facebook, there actually was an incident of two 30-year-old men, one an out gay man in Los Angeles, who received a Facebook message from one of his childhood bullying tormentors, apologizing to him. It's a moving and wonderful story, a story that I would hope we would all want to live into on either side of that issue. Now here's the rub. Decades later, I can't recall the names of most of my tormentors, and even more sadly, I can't remember the name of that other boy. However incomplete and imperfect the journey of forgiveness may be, it begins with remembering and telling the story. Forgiveness turns out to be necessary for all of us. And it is illustrated so directly and painfully direct in that passage we hear from the Gospel according to Matthew today. It's one of those hard sayings and hard stories of Jesus that, I don't know about you, but I really wish it weren't in the Bible. Not only does it literally command us to forgive far more often than we want. Peter and we can imagine maybe seven times, but 77 times? In some translations, it's 70 times seven times. It commands more forgiveness than we can even imagine. Jesus, get real. You can't mean that. And then it goes even further with this ugly story. Let's just say it's an ugly story of slaves and debtors' prison, and a king who is both gracious and then severely judgmental by the end. Frankly, I prefer the story of the prodigal son and that loving, embracing father as a story of forgiveness than this one. But we have to look at it as well. First, I don't believe that it is God who condemns us to torture. The suffering is a natural consequence of our actions towards one another, our bitterness towards one another. And while there is reason to recognize there is this great and uncomfortable distance between the story in Scripture and our culture, if we're honest, there's not a much difference in human nature between then and now and that story and our stories. As hard as the story is, this little story illustrates that we all stand in need of forgiveness, will experience forgiveness, and likewise must extend it to others. The image of a prison is difficult, but it's actually an apt metaphor. There's a story in the Book of Forgiveness by the Tutus, and it's a story they share about a man whom they call Jeffrey. And at about the age of 30, he began to tell the story of his sexual abuse at the age of 12. He had spent years in silence and secrecy, depression, and broken relationships. But he took the risk and told it to his young wife, and began speaking the truth of his story to others. And he begins talking about this to other men who have experienced sexual abuse. And he describes it as though just the telling of the story, a huge weight was lifted off of his chest, and he felt he could take a deep breath, for the first time in years after the secrecy and the shame. He continued to tell his story to others, and he describes it like this. Now, it's not as though everything was suddenly made okay and I lived happily ever after, but it was as though I was locked in a dungeon for years, only to discover I had the key to get out all along. The discovery that he had been locked in a dungeon for years and realized he had the keys to get out all along. You know, just before the passage from Matthew that we hear, chapter 18, verse 18, there is one of these curious sayings of Jesus, and it is, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And if you recall, there's a story in the Gospel of John. It's actually on the Sunday evening of that Easter resurrection when he first appears to his disciples. He enters through the door without opening it. Woo, spooky. Okay. And he appears to his disciples. He breathes the Holy Spirit upon them, and he adds, if you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. Anyone remember that little twist on Resurrection Sunday? We may recall that the healings of Jesus were very disturbing and disrupting to the authorities of the day, but what really unnerved them and outraged the religious authorities was when Jesus told someone their sins were forgiven. Remember those stories? It was an outrage because it was believed that it was only God who had the power to forgive sin. Now it was this Jesus modeling forgiveness of the sins of others, and in these curious sayings that we all too often overlook, by extension, even we have that power. We're reminded of the holy power we possess. We can forgive or not. We can seek forgiveness or not. The power and the choice is ours. Forgiveness, the power to change your story. In this book, the Tutus sometimes use the expression, the power to change from the victim to the hero of your story. That power is in your hands. From powerlessness to powerfulness, and the power is in your hands all along. Is anyone here sealed behind a hard, cold stone of bitterness, anger, and resentment at a loss or a hurt or a trauma? Let us return to that metaphor Jesus used. We're locked in a prison. The prisons in which we are held captive by the past, the prisons in which we keep others captive. But the news is this: the keys to the prison door are already in our hands. Will we unlock the door and step free into the fresh air? I'd ask you to join me in a prayer that I adapted from the Book of Forgiving by the Tutus. It's a responsive prayer. There will be A, B, and all. All, you know who you are. A, let's call A just sort of down the center here. This will be group A, when it says A, and will be group B. See, that sort of makes sense? So when it's A, read B, and then all. Okay. I'm glad you like that. Okay. Let us go together in prayer. We cannot make a new start as though the past has not happened. But we can plant something new in the burnt ground. In time, we will harvest a new story of who we are.
I am a person who could hurt you. Knowing those truths, we choose to make something new. Forgiveness is my back bent to clear away the dead tangle of hurt and make a space, a field fit for planting.
Amen.